That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This little advert is for shapers only. This is not a paid ad. I'm just mentioning it because I think a lot of you would actually want this and probably don't know it exists. Dane Hance of Vulcan Surfboards has designed and built a couple of shaping tools. They are very smartly engineered and very well built. There's a ShapeMaster sanding block, which allows perfectly uniform concaves and contours. The Radius Profile rail tool allows for perfectly uniform rails. And then the kind of most ingenious little contraption is the UL1. And it's a super practical tool that just guides perfect pin lines, lap cuts, tape lines, reference marks. Really, really rad little tool. Anyways, I've linked to all of these in the show notes for quick access, or you can find them on surfvulcan.com/shop. Happy shaping. And then, have you gotten your slow tide gear yet? Nothing but rave response from this partnership. Beach towels, bath towels, beach blankets, yoga towels, changing ponchos. Slow Tide makes luxurious products beautifully designed and responsibly manufactured through sustainable sourced cottons, polyester made from recycled plastic bottles. I've been using and even gifting Slow Tide towels for a year prior to partnering with them for this podcast. So I'm a huge fan and just generally a believer in little everyday luxuries. Slowtide.co is their website. Use promo code podcast to support this show and then save yourself 10%. Free shipping on orders over $50 and a free tote on orders over $100. Slowtide.co, promo code podcast.
Went out different ways. I've been married for like 57 years, right? I could surf really good, but I was more interested in having a family, you know, because a lot of surfers give up a lot to become a surfer. They don't have a family life, and where the family life for me was the most important thing, because I was born during the war in Holland. And we came here in 1951, and my parents were completely, I don't know what happened to them in the war. There was no communication, no, sort of really hard to get on with. That's why I got sent to boarding school. My parents separated in the first year. The father was, I don't know, secret agent or what. He wouldn't talk about anything.
Did you ever try to ask him?
Yeah, just clammed up all the time.
Yeah. It's tragic.
Yeah, oh yeah, unbelievable, right? Yeah. And so, you just don't know, you know, and I didn't want to force the issue or anything, you know, so.
I think when you're a kid, you internalize some of that stuff and you think that it's a reflection of you or whatever, or that they're just not a good person. And when you get older and you understand the context of world history and the wars that were happening, I think it gives you a little bit more sympathy towards their plight.
Yeah, I never, because I was dyslexic, I was just in my own world, right? Completely.
How does the dyslexia manifest for you? Because when I hear dyslexic, I just think that people mix up words in a sentence, you know?
You're traveling too fast.
Your brain is.
Yep. That's the thing. And you're not, because you're seeing the big picture all the time, the person that explained to me said, if you look at the world, most good artists are all dyslexic. Right? And they're trying to, at school I had trouble because, you know, you couldn't write or spell and understand things. I was good at woodwork, metalwork, maths, and economics. But English, hopeless, completely over there. And they didn't know about dyslexia. And they used to say to you, oh, you're stupid or you're lazy or things like that. Right. And then in the last year in the boarding house I was living in, the housemaster picked up, there was about three or four of us, we all hung together. But we didn't know we were dyslexic. We knew we were different or something else was going on in our lives. Right. And he took us. Once a week, he'd take us into his quarters and play classical music to us. And it calmed us all down. It was really interesting what happened. Mm. I always knew something was happening.
Have you, up until this day, been diagnosed, or is it self-diagnosed?
My wife's got motor neuron disease, right? And she's got one of the world leaders in the subject. He's also the head of the Michael Fox Institute for Parkinson's.
Oh, okay.
Right? And he one day said to me, what's going on in your world? And I said, I think I'm dyslexic. He said, I know you are. And then he explained everything to me about it. And then he put me onto a guy, Rick Stein's a famous chef, and his brother is at Oxford University, and he's the head of, he knows more about dyslexia than anyone, and they're trying to find a system where they can identify it in young kids so they don't go through school thinking they're stupid.
Right.
They can't read, or so they're trying to identify it really early, and they're not sure how they can do it, or, you know. It's just interesting, and having known now I know that what's going on in my world, I all the time speak to myself, telling me to slow down. And I notice more and more that when I'm sending emails, I'm three words ahead thinking that I'm typing, right? And it's that's just the speed you're traveling at. And you see everything really clearly. And that's, as a kid, I was really good at rugby league, unbelievably good. But I could, because I could see everything going on all the time. And I played in a position where I had the ball in my hands more than anyone else, so I could make breaks or set people up or anything like that. And I did play that till I was about 18, and then I just went, no. And the people around it, amateur sports people that run things, were annoying me because they, you know, I just went, no. And then I just went surfing more.
Born in 1944 in The Hague, Netherlands, Dick Van Straelen became best known for the sleek single fin boards he made throughout the 70s, designed for the high-speed point breaks of Burley Heads and Kira. He made boards for everyone from Wayne Bartholomew, Peter Townsend, Michael Ho, and Dave Rostovich during the second half of his career. His family moved from the Netherlands to the Sydney suburb of Avalon in 1951, and then he began shaping boards shortly thereafter in 1956.
'56 is when Greg Knoll and Tom Zamm came to Australia for the Olympic Games, and it's basically, it kicked off, it was surfing before then, but it kicked off a whole new thing, a whole different everything, you know, and they came out here and did exhibition surfing, one at Torquay for the Olympic Games, and then they did one at Avalon where I lived, and then they did one at Cronulla, and it was just interesting, you know, they had balsa boards, but the thing that surprised me more than anything was Greg Knoll's paddleboard. That would, for me, as a 12-year-old, 10-year-old, I just looked at it and went, unbelievable.
What about it?
We still had plywood ones, you know, what they call toothpicks. And this was hollow, fiberglass, steering system, knee wells. I just looked at it, unbelievable, you know. And it stuck with me for a long time, you know, how just looking at the comparison. I mean, the surfing, I understood because we'd already seen people come back with balsa boards, right, and everything like that, where the I'm really attracted to ocean, right, waterman, everything. It was a really good example. And then in 1988, I think, Mick DeBetta asked me to make some boards for him for Molokai.
Oh, okay.
Right, and that I just jumped at it.
Yeah.
It was just like a whole rekindle, you know.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was a good, interesting exercise just to be dealing with people that are in the ocean all the time. And they're all still riding waves. They're riding swells rather than waves, you know. So it was really interesting. That's...
So 1956, though, I mean, it's before the advent of polyurethane foam for surfboard production, anyways.
Yeah, my first surfboard in 56 was out of EPS. EPS is the oldest foam in the world. EPS has always been around, and it was vacuum form between two sheets of ply.
Are you kidding?
No. And how they did it was the bottom piece was the plan shape and the top piece was the deck. So when they glued it together, it was a down railer because the foam that's sticking out, they just curved it onto the bottom.
Sure.
And first of all, didn't have enough rocker in it. So we put cut marks in it every 6 inches and bent it. And
funny.
It was unbelievable.
Funny.
Yeah, really.
So what
good.
Was that board? How big was it?
9 foot.
9 foot, okay.
Yeah, 9 foot. It was just, you know, it was shaped more like the early balsa boards when they were coming out. Yeah, they had little round pods and they were nosy. They were like trackers, early balsa boards. And then they had pig ones where they were had more curve in the arse, you know, because of the way they could turn and everything like that.
Yeah.
If you were to chart a timeline of surfboard manufacturing history, an inception point could be placed at 1958. Board builders had been experimenting with polyurethane foam since the 40s, but in the late 50s, Gordon Clark and Hobie Alter developed the foam sufficiently that Hobie switched out his entire surfboard production from balsa wood over to polyurethane foam. It would become the standard core material for surfboard manufacturers worldwide that endures to this day. EPS foam resurged into popularity when Clark closed his business in 2005. That flashpoint has created a perception in the market that EPS is a more modern surfboard core material. But in reality, it's been used for as long as, if not longer, than polyurethane. And vacuum bagging it has been around just as long.
The guy who did it was a fiberglass engineer.
For aerospace or something?
No, just for his own little business. He was making molds and doing all sorts of fiberglassing, you know, because that's what he learned. And it was just, it's interesting. Like, I've been using EPS surfboards about since 1985, 80, right?
Okay.
Again, back into EPS. It's interesting where it's going. And a lot of people don't realize there's air in EPS.
Right.
They don't realize that. And it's interesting because you've got all these different weights. And I played with the air a lot. Right, so all my EPS boards that I make have all got hard edges, really hard. Right, because you're on top of the water so much, you use air. You'd say you're using edge a lot more, and it's just interesting how they work. People have taken to it. You know, I don't know where it's going to go because extrude. They're using an EPS now called. See, there's two EPSs. They're expanded and extruded, but it's not good.
Oh, really? Why not?
Because it's under pressure, it rips away from itself. It's good. See, they've made it for other things, not for surfboards. They've made it for, like, things in houses and things, you know.
Construction material.
Yeah, yeah.
Like filler, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they put it inside walls.
Right.
And it's also soundproofing.
Okay.
Right? And it rips away. And a lot of people, again, I used it when I first met Dave. I used it. We did all these boards that I make him are EPS. All the whole way along, I just made them EPS. We got given some extruded, and it was interesting, but it ripped away from itself because it's under tension. And everyone still thinks it's delaminating. But when you drilled in to have a look, you can see the foam was still stuck to the glass. But the foam was ripping away from itself under tension when you were, right? And I just think the interesting part, it's got air in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, when you put them on a scale, they're about as heavy as, they've got a bit of weight. As soon as you pick them up, they feel light because it's got air in it, right? And I say to people, you get a balloon and with no air in it, and it feels heavy. As soon as you put air in it, there's no weight. You know, that's I just like, I've been riding styrofoam for about 20 years.
Okay.
I enjoy what it does. It's hydrophobic, which means it's afraid of water. And I took all that information we had into when I did boards for Molokai. We did concaves, right? Which a lot of people, everyone
concaves in the deck?
In the bottom.
Oh, in the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it wants to rise. It wants to... Balsa and styrofoam are the same, are in the same sort of thing. They've both got air in them, right? They make gliders out of both of them, right? It's just, that's interesting. I make balsa boards as well at the moment because I think it's part of our history of surfing, balsa. And I just like making balsa boards. They're beautiful, they're nice to ride. In the early days, the reason I've got one and I ride it at the pass occasionally when it's on shore because the pass holds its shape and it's on shore. And a balsa board just goes fantastic because it just cuts through chop. You don't feel anything. The chop just glides. And I got the idea from an early Paul Witzig movie when Phil Edwards came out here. Phil Edwards had a balsa board and he surfed the pass when it was on shore. And I was like, hey, look at this. It's just ripping. And it's on shore, you know. And so I went, okay, balsa boards are good for a lot of things.
Surfing was experiencing growth around the world simultaneously. And there was an increasing need for board builders everywhere. Dick's parents weren't exactly sure how to process his interest and direct his energy.
Because I'm dyslexic and my parents didn't really know what was going on in my world, they sent me to boarding school. So in 1957, 4 years was taken out of my life, basically.
Where was boarding school?
In Sydney.
Oh, okay.
In Sydney, went to boarding school in Sydney.
Okay.
But it just, you didn't get a chance to surf for 4 years. You know, you have holidays, but you couldn't get into it. And then in 62, I started working again, started shaping surfboards, left boarding school, and it was good, but there still wasn't enough money to be made.
Right. How much awareness did you have of what was going on in California with board builders?
All the time. That's been my, Hawaii and California has been the lead point.
Okay.
Right.
What was your exposure? Was it strictly through surfer magazines?
Surfing magazines, okay. Right. I married in 65 and I couldn't make enough money, so I got a job with Qantas to fly Stewart. And I flew for 2 years, Sydney, Hawaii, San Francisco, every third week.
That's
so
a good
I picked
route.
Up friends in Hawaii and I met a guy in San Francisco called Dickie Keating.
Okay.
And he was the first guy from that area, he lived at Pedro Point, to be invited into the Duke contest.
Oh, wow.
Right? From that area.
Okay.
And just, so when I went to, I'd hang out with him, he was a salmon fisherman. And yeah, just interesting, you know, and they were into, you look at, they were into short, really short boards. It was just, it was explosions happening everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And then the next big influence was when the Stubbies was on, right? When all the Hawaiians came in here and all the Hawaiians hung, when they were here, they're all over my factory all the time. And they finished up making boards for a lot of them because they were interested in what I was doing. And, you know, a good friend of mine, Russell Hughes, have you heard of him?
Yeah.
Right? Every time he went overseas, he'd come and see me and he'd bring back boards all the time. He showed me. The first board was Shannon Diffenderfer.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It was phenomenal. And then the next time, he showed me a Lopez and a Brewer when the down rails started happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he just said, look at these. And we were just really good friends.
Van Strelen's dyslexia has the power to either impede or inform his work, dependent upon the people around him and the systems that they put into place to bolster his acute mindset.
Obviously, not being able to identify dyslexia in your youth can come with its own problems, but I feel also now, kind of in the modern society, things are over-diagnosed.
Yep.
And I guess over-diagnosing it isn't the problem, but then medicating, assigning medication to something if it's a misdiagnosis, is a problem too.
Yeah, yeah. That's the same as surfing. I think we overanalyze everything completely.
Really?
I don't understand where people say, oh, I think the board could be 16 inches narrower. And I'm going, hang on here. You're overanalyzing it.
See,
when I shape surfboards, I only put the length.
Oh, really? You don't put the dimensions?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm glad that you're saying this because people, even Jake, he was going to loan me some boards for the Gold Coast. And he's like, what volume do you ride? I'm like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And then he goes, well, what size? And I'm like, I don't know, 6'1" short boards is what I, what dimensions? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because the volume thing's a wank.
Is it?
It's just a readout on a computer. And I say to people, have you put that in a displacement tank? And they say, what do you mean? I said, well, you can only tell volume when you put it in a displacement tank. how much water it displaces, that's your volume.
Yeah.
And this is a readout. You know? It's just, it just gets more and more interesting as you go along. A couple of years ago, me and Rasta had a talk. They had a surfboard symposium, right? And I talked about it, and Dave knows what's going on in my world. I can talk in front of a few people, but when I'm in a crowd, I get nervous because I don't know where to find the words, right? And he knows what goes on, so he helps me. And Mark Price was there, right? He's the head of FireWire,
yeah.
And he sent me an email the next day because I talked about it. I said, we've got to be careful here. We're losing our creativity in our surf because everything's just being made by a computer. And we've got no creativity. There's nothing, no, from over here or over there, you know, wild things happening. And he sent me an email the next day. He said, thank you very much. It said, your talk was fantastic. I agree with where you were going.
Okay.
All right? I said, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, so I agree with you. The reason why I don't keep track of dimensions on my surfboards or volume is because I don't want to restrict the exploration. I don't want to think that I know what I know. Like, I don't want to communicate with a shaper and be like, hey, build me this exact volume and dimension.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, I want to leave room for magic to happen.
Yeah.
I want to leave room for something, what I don't know, to be taught to me.
Yeah.
But I also recognize that understanding those, the kind of formula of it, allows you to then devote more time and attention towards refining a design or something like that. You know, if you can kind of knock out the basics, then you can focus your time on either refining the design or maybe it's just communicating with the customer more thoroughly.
Yeah, but you can't refine it because it's something that happens at the moment. Like even guys that are getting computers, they get 10.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to be all the same.
Right.
And I don't know, understand how they can tell because you can't surf the whole 10 in one day.
Right.
And the next day you're thinking different because you're changing.
Everything's different.
Yeah. This is the whole thing me and Dave talk about a lot. Like, he says, oh, the board's been going really good and then it doesn't good. And he says, it's not the board, it's how you think. Something's gone on in your life to change the way you think about things.
Yeah.
And I talked to him saying, when I first met him when he was 14, 16 years old, phenomenal surfer, far better than he is now. That's why you say to him. He said, why? I said, well, you accepted everything and you just rode it for what it was. But as you're going along and you get older, your focus starts narrowing and you've got to be really careful that you lock into one thing where there's all these other things. It's like I say to a lot of kids, they talk about, oh, I can only ride this. I said, do you only listen to one album? I said, what do you mean? I said, well, that surfing's just like music. It's an instrument. You can play all these different tunes with it. All right? And they're too manipulated. That's how I look at it. The marketing is giant, you know, they're manipulated. They don't think about things. And it, with mobile phones, it's even got worse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think a couple of thoughts. It is the marketing, but it's also this kind of current generation and society. It's more selfish than it ever was.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Individuals think that they're the experts. Everybody's got all this ego. And so then how could somebody ever teach you something about surfing? If you're the guy who knows everything and you're the king of your own world, then you know what's best for you. And that ego is going to get in the way of everything. So back to what you're saying, being open, like Dick Rasta when he was 14, that's where you're going to kind of absorb the most information and have the most data to work with and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it's interesting because just lately, I've started an Instagram site, right?
Yeah.
And it works well, man. Before then, no one could find who I was. And a marketing person asked me why. And I said, well, I know if people can find me, they want the board. I'm not attracting people who think I'm someone special. I'm attracting people who actually want one of my surfboards.
They seek you out.
Yeah, they seek me out, right? Yeah. And the marketing person, that's very interesting how you're doing that. So yeah, and then when I got on Instagram, a lot of people who most probably been fighting me found me now. And it's interesting, a lot of young kids ring me up that are good surfers and say they're completely confused about surfing and they don't know where it's going and they're losing their enthusiasm for it because everything is the same. Right? Everything is just the same. And they want to break away. I just did a board for a kid from Torquay called Adam Robinson.
Yeah.
right?
He's an amazing surfer.
Yeah, he rang me up, said, he's trying to find me. And then finally someone said, oh, you heard of him? And I said, no, I haven't heard of him. And they said, oh, I'll give you a card. He rang me up and then he just talked about it. And I sent him aboard last week, just made him something completely EPS, carbon bottom, hard edges. And I said, how'd it go? He said, it sings a beautiful song.
Love that.
Yeah, right?
Is it a thruster, like a shortboard thruster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just 510.
Okay.
Yeah, EPS.
Okay.
Right? I try to let people feel the difference, because a lot of people, I don't know, EPS and all that. But a lot of people don't know how to shape it, because EPS needs edges. You can't make like modern boards with it because it's on top of the water, and you go into white water, it goes sideways.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got to think about what the material is and handle it completely different.
Right. Do you still build boards for Rasta?
No.
Why not?
Occasionally. I just don't have the time.
Okay.
I don't have the money. All those sorts of things. And I'm a carer. And Dave's, he's out there doing his own thing. And then occasionally I'll just make one and I'll drop it off and he surfs it. And he likes them. It's just, I'm just doing different things. So I shape from 9-foot boards to 4'2".
Yeah.
You know, just everything. I just enjoy, because I approach shaping surfboards more than like doing a painting or art.
Yeah, I could tell.
Right? It's a sculpture. You know, you get in there and you just sculpt the blank, you know.
At the height of Van Strelen's professional success, he had an abrupt career change when his surfboard factory burned to the ground.
My father had a cake shop in he moved up here to be closer to the grandkids, and he had a cake shop in Miami, and the guy working for him, my father died all of a sudden, and then I ran the cake shop for a little while, and the guy came up to me and said, your father owes me rent. I said, owes me a wage. No, I said, no, you're casual, right? Then he took me to court, lost the court case.
He did or you did?
He did.
He lost it.
Oh, yeah.
No case
whatsoever, and then I tried to renew the lease, His friend owned the place and they wouldn't renew the lease, so I had to sell everything. He got some bodgy guy to buy everything, never paid for it. Just all that. And because the fire was started outside in the bin, wasn't inside, it was like out in the rubbish bin and went through the window.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So what happened? Was it in the middle of the night or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So nobody was in danger of being harmed. He was
no.
It was retribution.
Yeah, yes, that's how I look at it. And then people say, what are you doing? I said, you have to let everything go. I said, you can wreck yourself by feeling nasty or whatever. You just let it go. It's something that happened, you can't change. Whatever happened yesterday, you can't change. So move on.
How did you feel that at the time, though? I mean, clearly...
It was good because we just changed the direction.
Do you really feel that okay about it?
I don't have animosity about anything.
Really?
Yeah. It's just life. That's me and my wife, we talk about what's happening to her. And I struggle more with that because we're so close. And then watching what's going on in her life and how she behaves and things and what goes on and everything. It's interesting. But people say, I just say, oh, no, we've been together 57 years. We've had a fantastic life. This is going to happen to everyone. You've got to mentally, you've got to stay alert, because I have this thing, everything is the way you think it is, right? As soon as you change your thinking, everything changes.
It relates exactly to what you were saying with surfboards, with Dave Rostovich riding boards, and just if you're having a bad day, you're not going to have
the
experience.
It's the same with when I was doing racing boards. People, they go good for 6 months, and I was saying, the board's no good. I said, no, the board's fantastic. It's how you think about things. Something's gone in your world to change, turn around how you're thinking about things.
Yeah.
Right? And it's really important.
Hmm.
I have a lot...
It's easier said than done.
I mean,
I think that a lot of people have this kind of... have predispositions in their life from maybe it's childhood trauma, maybe it's a chemical imbalance in them, or diet related, or they didn't listen to classical music or whatever it is. And so they go into a situation and they can't maintain that clarity. They automatically react with anger or something.
Yeah. About 15 years ago, we bought these tapes. that are called the sound's called Holsync.
Okay.
Right. Very interesting, and it's a vibration.
Holsync.
Holsync. And they're meditation tapes. You lay down, put your earphones on, and you can feel it. You can feel your body vibrating, right?
Okay.
After you're
go
done.
Go for it.
Yeah. Take. Sorry, that's just my glass. Okay. After it's done, you wake up and it's just like you're, everything's gone.
Really?
Yeah.
What exactly do you do? Is it like an hour long, like a massage?
Half
you
hour.
Sit back.
Half
okay.
Hour.
Turn it on. 30 yeah, minutes,
yeah.
Lay
meditation.
Down.
Meditation. Okay. So just a form of meditation. And then I listen to a lot of ambient music, right? Then just in the last couple of weeks, I learned that most big sports clubs in the world, when they're training, play music loud. And it changes something with the system they're talking about. It changes your system, the molecular structure of your body. That's what they're talking about all the time. And I got some friends that are clinical psychologists. And they talk about a lot of that music and everything. Because I question myself a lot of times when I see surf contests, what the guys are listening to, right? And it's really important because you could be listening to something negative, you know, or you listen to songs where sound is completely different.
Yeah.
You're not listening to words or, you know, you're listening to sound and it's all vibrating and changing how everything goes. Everything I listen to is ambient, really, these days. At lunchtime here, I'll sit from the... I've got it on my iPad, I've got all this different, listen to some, and it's really good, it relaxes you, and you focus differently.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
After the surfboard factory burned down, he took some time away from board building, got into the garment making business with his wife, and then a young local surfer named Dave Rostovich culled him back into making surfboards.
He was, as a nipper, it was unbelievable. He was going to be the next Trevor Handy.
Yeah.
Right, really good waterman, unbelievable swimmer, everything. Right, got on really. And then I met him. Someone said, "Oh, have you heard of Dave Rastovich?" I said, "Yeah." And he said he was after a board. He wants to meet you. So me and my wife were walking on the beach one day. I said, "That's him surfing there." And when he came out of the water, he didn't have a clue who I was.
Oh, really?
So I was just talking to him. That's a good board. And I said, "That's EPS." Yeah. He's looking at me. Who are these people? And then I just said, "Oh, hi. I believe you want some surfboards. My name's Dick Van Straal." And he went, and then next day, he was at my factory with his father, got on really well with his father. And it was just a whole change for him.
Perhaps due to a desire to make order out of his dyslexia, or perhaps the dyslexia predisposed Van Straalen to an open perspective on altered states. Timothy Leary was a clinical psychologist at Harvard University studying LSD and psilocybin, which at the time were still legal in the US. This was 1960, 61, 62. Leary believed that LSD had therapeutic benefit in psychiatry, and he used it himself for what he reported as personal development, mind expansion, and exploring personal truth. He became connected to the surf world by referencing surfers in his lectures as beings who live in the moment through the act of riding waves. He explained that all matter travels in waves, light waves, sound waves, and that surfers have figured out how to ride waves and therefore have mastered how to live in the moment, which is the key to contentment. Steve Pesman conducted an interview with Leary about his philosophy and then published an article entitled The Evolutionary Surfer in the January 1978 issue of Surfer magazine. I'm not sure if Van Straelen was an actual participant in Leary's Harvard studies in the early 60s, or just an informal participant with Leary himself, or perhaps just standing in solidarity an ocean away. But he found benefit in Leary's teachings.
You see it everywhere. You see patterns of the same reoccurring. Like, I was part of the Timothy Leary experience. Right?
Yeah.
Way back in the early days.
Yeah.
And we had guides. You know, we had a guide with us. And he said, this is what's going to happen to you, everything, right? And so he went through it, did the whole thing. And the patterns you see are the same as the patterns of the Peruvians. You know, everywhere in the ancient world, you look at all the patterns they were making, they're all there in the world. They're just patterns you see every day in life, you know, yeah. How energy works and everything like that.
Yeah.
You know, and it just was really interesting. And then we did that, and then 4 weeks later we fasted for 7 days. We went through exactly the same experience as the LSD.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right? Because that all LSD is like lethargic acid. It's just stomach acid.
Do you think that the fasting, you would have had that experience fasting had you not already had the LSD experience?
Well, he was just showing you what happened. What,
I know, but I hear people talk about LSD and that it opens a dimension you can then access later by doing other things like fasting.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if you would have been able to access that dimension without having already...
Yeah, you would have, because you would have got... Yeah, that's what he said, right?
Okay.
And if you look at the modern world now, microdosing is giant.
What are your thoughts on it?
Like, fantastic.
Yeah?
Especially for mental. Like, with the Timothy Leary thing, they were already giving... They were all treating American soldiers that had mental disorders with LSD, right? And it was working really well, right? Same happening now. Now they're making real LSD. It's not commercial, you know, they're making the real stuff. Because LSD was made by someone, I guess, somewhere in Switzerland, and he was making some chemical, and accidentally licked his finger and he went into a trip.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that story.
It was accidental.
Okay.
Right? No one ever wanted that. It was completely accidental.
Yeah.
So that's as far as I know. You know, and it's just interesting. And then it just went off the rails. And a lot of people weren't mentally prepared. They didn't go through the thing where you were told what was going to happen to you. Right? And the interesting thing with LSD, you can snap out of it like that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Straight back into normal.
Just when it wears off, or you can intentionally make yourself snap out?
Yeah, intentionally make, in case something's happening, right? Say something's happening that you need to control straight away.
Yeah.
You snap out of it straight away.
Really?
Yeah.
What,
because it's interesting. I don't know, maybe that's because of my dyslexia. I don't know. I got no idea.
Right.
It, you hear people freaking out, but I just went, how do you freak out on? Or you're not used to, you're fighting what you're seeing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because everything really opens up.
Right.
You know, you're seeing things, you go, like, and you think about the Indians and stuff like that before. They used to take peyote and all sorts of things, right?
Right.
And, you know, you look at their patterns and everything and what they went, you know, all their fancy work, their patterns, everything was just, and it was just like, you know, it's out there. But as we've gone along, as human beings, we're being drugs, alcohol, everything in our system, right?
Yeah.
Which stops you from externally seeing things. You're being closed down a lot more.
Yeah.
Where early days, you know, the Aborigine saw it all. our indigenous people saw it everything. And then I just read the other day, they mightn't have been here 60,000 years, they could have been here 160,000 years. Mm. Right? You look at their artwork.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, drawings with halos around them and kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right?
It's actually surprising. You can kind of draw a comparison to board building in that a lot of that stuff was so innovative a very long time ago.
Yeah.
They were actually making more innovations, even with engineering and things like building the pyramids and all that. Like the amount of engineering involved, it's actually more advanced than we're at now. But society is so resistant to change, and board building is the same exact way. You came in using vacuum bagging and EPS, and it's still... people still view that as a modern technique, or they're just coming to realize that they can implement it now.
Yeah, the biggest thing I see that restricts board building is price.
The end price is so low that the manufacturer can't.
Well, Aviso sold for over $2,000.
Yeah.
Right? And they asked me to do a range for them, and I did a range, and we sold most probably 3,000 or 4,000 in Australia, and that after that, I just said that's all you're going to sell, you know, because everyone's got one, and they're the only people. There's only enough people interested in it because there's not. It's hard to get the message out there what they are.
Yeah,
I've got half one there. When people come, I show them. They just put okay, unbelievable.
Yeah,
so it is. It's just and no waste. That's the other thing. No waste. Mm-hmm. No resin in the factory because all the carbon's what's called preg. Right, so heat sets it off. So you've got surfboards have far too much resin to fiber content.
Okay.
Right, because of the way you have to build them. And like in the early days, we used to do everything was textured decks. Mm-hmm. Right, so you take all the resin out, wax and hang onto it. But what happened was when deck grips come in, deck grips would go onto textured decks, so they stopped them. We're slowly going back into a lot of stuff with textured decks again.
Yeah.
Just reduce them. That's I say to a lot of people. You look at boards, you know, and on the bottom you've got cracks in them. You know they're cracking. Well, I said that's just polyester. The bottom of your board's always up to the sun. I said the polyester on the bottom of your board's drying out due to the sun. And then when it flexes, it's just the resin on the bottom, the excess resin, cracking. It's not the fiberglass. It's the resin. There's too much resin that's cracking.
Right. Because it gets brittle.
Yeah, it gets brittle.
Yeah. Where do you see what's interesting to me is, even though you've been around longer than anybody, building boards for longer than anybody, you're always on the cutting edge. You've always seemed to be on the cutting edge of incorporating new materials in
because
your boards.
That's because I'm not making 100 boards a week, right? And I just like change. I'll do anything. Like I got a paddle board out there.
Yeah.
That we put concave rails on.
Yeah.
In still water, unbelievable. In the surf, shit house.
Really?
But it was interesting. You know, you went, okay, we've learned something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of the things, when I do custom orders, I'll be thinking about it the day before, and you start mentally visualizing what you've got to do, right? And then I spend as least time in that shaping bay as I possibly can.
Okay.
Right? I just get in there and rip into it.
Yeah.
Right, and it's the best way because you already got it. Everything's in you, and you're letting it out. You know, and then you walk away for a while because you have to change your vision because it's so white, your vision changes. So walk away, go do something else, then walk back in and have a look again when you just change it a little bit, your light, everything like that.
Yeah.
Right. It's just.
Do you feel like your dyslexia has helped or hindered your shaping career?
Helped because you're looking at everything differently. It's that whole vision. I learned that by playing football, and then when I thought about later what's going on, I realized why I was good because I could see everything that was going on.
Do you treat it in any way?
No. Yeah. At night time, I have a couple of joints. It slows me down.
Does it?
Yeah. Well, when I first met Anne, we used to hang out at the Newport Hotel a fair bit and drink, and then one day she said, "Did you drive us home?" And I was going out with another girl. "Drive me home and I get changed." I said, "Yep." I drove her home. She lived on Bill Collar Plata. Then on the way back, she said, "Have you heard of marijuana?" I said, "Yeah." "You want to smoke?" "Yep, I have a joint." And that was it. We're connected from that on.
Yeah.
And it changed how it slows me down. right? So I've been self-medicating for 50 years.
Okay.
Right, just slows me down. At nighttime, it relaxes me. You know, my wife says, I get amped up in here because of what you do, and then you look at what you've done, and you go, that's far out, you know?
Yeah. Do you, why do you wait till night? First of all, why do you wait till night to do it? And is it only slowing you down, or is it opening, creative pathways?
Down, and it creates different things. And it depends on what, if I have a cookie, I'll do it during the day.
Because like an edible.
Yeah, because it's different. It's a different, completely
it's a
different stone.
More psychedelic.
Yeah, far different stone, where smoking a joint is more of a whack on the head.
Yeah.
Right? That's how I look at it. It just, it's nice. It relaxes you really well.
So without it, you will just kind of, your wheels will just be spinning all night long.
Yeah.
You probably won't be able to sleep.
I can sleep. I go through periods where I'll stop for a while. You know, you have to, it's just educating yourself and making sure you got the willpower to do things.
Yeah.
Right? You have to do all sorts of things to yourself to keep your willpower going.
Mm.
Right? To make sure you're on the track all the time. Otherwise, you could run wild all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know? Because I do some boards for Tom Carroll as well.
Yeah.
Right? And after I read the book about his addictions and everything, I rang up Tom and said, Tom, I said, I'll make you some boards. I said, everything you're doing is part of your addiction. And I said, because all your surfboards are part of an addiction, right? And he realized it, right? That the whole thing, and he's pulled back a lot from surfing a little bit, and he's got a new partner. And I just make him boards that I made him a hydro hull, I made him a single fin, he's got a quad, and they're all different to what he's riding. So he steps away and then it's another song. That's how I look at it. It's just another type of music.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this for a while.
Yeah. With marijuana being legalized in California.
Yeah. We're living in a funny world. Like, you look at Holland, completely legalized everything. No crime, they're closing down jails. The best economy in Europe.
Yep.
Right? Portugal just did it too.
Yep.
Barcelona's done it, right? Just they've got a little lot of crimes gone because no one can, it's not a criminal offense anymore or whatever, And everything's legal, so everyone, it's more business now.
Yeah.
And the government makes money out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody wins.
Yeah.
What do you drink alcohol?
Yep.
You do? Okay.
Because my wife does. She because of the tablets she's taking and she gets anxiety, at night time she'll have a couple of glasses of wine.
Yeah.
Right? Sometimes the wine. On Fridays after a week's work, I'll have a couple of beers.
Yeah. It's interesting that the one thing that is legal, alcohol, has almost zero medical benefit and actually has a lot of detrimental effect. And then, of course, is responsible for a lot of crime or correlated with a lot of crime. Whereas these other things that you're, weed, for example.
Yeah. Because I've just been drinking black beer.
I don't know.
There's a Mexican beer that's black that you drink with Mexican food. Fantastic.
Okay.
And there's a Japanese beer that's black, right? And it has, the guy was telling me, it has different hops in it. It has different herbs, how they've made it. So it's good for your health, right? Right? It just depends on how they make it. I drink a beer out of Tasmania called Bogues. No preservatives, no nothing. Natural water, fantastic. Because some beers upset my stomach. And Bogues, fantastic.
Yeah. Do you notice, does the alcohol have any effect on your dyslexia?
No.
Okay.
No. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
This morning, I tell you what, it does have an effect on coffee.
Really?
Coffee speeds up even more.
Okay. So do you stay away from it?
I just have one cup in the morning. Yeah. This morning I got up at 5, went for a swim at Burley, then come home, had my coffee, breakfast, open the computer and say, who's attacking me, emails or whatever,
I'm curious what your thoughts on Instagram are. Do you enjoy it?
Well, when they explained it to me, the kids at Patagonia explained it, how you're supposed to handle it. And they just said, you've got to look at it as being your shop front, your window dressing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you
say it. A good way.
And tell stories with it. And don't hashtag. Right? Then someone else woke up to me the other day and said, for how many people are following you and how many hits you get on that, you're far in front of anyone else that hashtags.
Interesting. But do you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Last week or the week before, I was reading, and the sun sets in the Sydney Morning Herald on the Saturday paper, they have lots of foldouts, and they were talking, there's a whole bunch of people in Silicon Valley now won't let their children have mobile phones.
Yep.
And they're saying how dangerous it is.
So you should really consider what that means for us. Yeah. There, the reality is, like, we have obviously science that tells us about our physical health.
Yeah.
You should not eat these things. You should eat these things. Here's how many calories. Here's how much you should work out. Yeah. We don't have any of that stuff for your mental health.
No.
You know, for your, like, your emotional kind of well-being. Yeah. And I think that the science isn't in yet on what social media is doing to our brains.
Yeah.
And so we're going to figure out in a couple of years, it turns out that it's not healthy to stare at your phone all day and see what all your friends are doing and how they're doing it better than you. And they have a more beautiful lifestyle than you.
But that's only thinking that. This is the amazing thing where I say, lately I've been getting a lot of kids learning how to shake, right?
Okay.
Come and ask me. And I just say, just get, and they go, I can't tell you anything. I said, I can tell you, just go for it. Just imagine everything, go for it. And I said, don't beat yourself up about it, right? Make a board, surf it, it'll go good because you've made it. And I believe that hand-making stuff, when you hand-make a surfboard, inside that surfboard there's a certain amount of feeling. Because it's just, it's no different to anything, right? It's a material and it wants to be loved as well, right? By using machines, it's not being loved very much. And they're all very flat, and that's what a lot of people say, because I hand paint everything. They say, when you go somewhere and you look at your boards, they jump out at you. Because they're going, hey, look at me, I'm looking at that. And you go, I'm really good, you know, whether all white, I don't know. Yeah. And the thing that blew me out most is, it's all fake carbon. It's paper printed to look like carbon. I said to someone, that's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, and if someone in this industry was smart enough, they could have reported all these people and they would have been told to stop it.
Right.
Because it's called passing off.
Yeah.
You're passing something off for what it isn't.
Yeah.
Right? And it happens in this. It's just like you were saying, this industry, when I first started, everyone was happy. Right? Everyone had screamed and yelled waves, go for it, go, and happy, and you're all about that. And as time went by, and it started getting worse when leg ropes come in. The greed thing, you know. Before leg ropes, everyone wouldn't drop out on people, they pull back a bit more and cheer. Now it's just my way, they swear at people, everything, right? I've had a go at a lot of professional surfers, you know, you see them swearing at some kid for yada yada yada. I say, hang on here. I said, you're sponsored by Quicksilver, he's got a pair of Quicksilver shorts on. He's paying your fucking wage, you're telling the fuck off. I said, hey, and that's why I think Billabong and Quicksilver are gone, basically, right? Because they were just too greedy as well. And they over-analyzed how big surfing really is, and they didn't focus on their core product, board shorts and T-shirts.
Right.
They went everywhere. Right. Yeah. They have shoes, they have this, they have that. And they just mass took over every single surf shop. Like, when they were really, for people like me, it was hard to sell boards to any surf shop because they were in control of them all, and they don't pay. I've always been, you got to pay within 7 days.
Yeah.
Right? You can't, the size I am, you can't function on 30 days.
Right.
And I, you know, basically pay for everything as I go along.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, that's just good economics.
Yeah.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Yeah. How often are you surfing nowadays?
I don't surf much at all.
No?
No. I got to ride 10-foot boards because of my shoulders are going and at my age. And about 6 months ago, I had one, and a wave just pulled the board out of my hand and wrecked my shoulder up in here. So I just go swimming, and then I just shaped a new 10-foot fish up there.
Oh yeah.
Right? Which I'll, even if I lay down and get a wave, that's where I'll go next.
Okay,
Just lay down, and, you know, you're still the same.
Do you miss it though? Do you miss surfing?
No.
Why not?
Because it's hard to find a wave by yourself. Right? I just don't like what's going on in the water. And then this thing at Byron where they put up signs, you'll get fined if you surf without a leg rope.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. The legal company's done it.
Crazy.
And everyone's saying, hey, where are we going to go legally here? And I said to someone, I said, if you go to hospital and have a look, more injuries are caused from leg ropes, the board screwing back at them with fins,
yeah,
than anything.
I split my ear in half from that.
Yeah, and it's not a board being loose and running over someone in the surf. It's more in the water. And everyone that's been attacked by a shark wearing a leg rope.
Really?
Oh, yeah. At Byron, there's a guy attacked recently. When you talk to fishermen, sharks don't like us because we're warm-blooded. So they'll have a bite, but they won't eat you.
Right. But that one bite could...
Yeah. That bite could do... Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's because underneath the water... The regular looks like a lure or fish, you know, and they go for the lure. If you look at the Mick Fanning thing, the shark did not go for Mick Fanning, went for the leg rope.
Yeah.
They got the leg rope caught in his mouth. Yep. They pulled it off, right?
Yeah.
No one wanted to talk about that.
I've never thought about that.
Right? Because I mean, on this, like in Byron, there's some old guys, about 20, 30 people, you know, women and men. Every day they walk from the surf club to the point and swim back through the ocean. Not one of them has ever been bitten by a shark. And it's been going on for 20 years or more.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, oh, it is. I just, no one wants to know. Because
I don't know. It sounds hokey, you know? I mean, to think that a shark can discern what a lure is or a fishing line or any of that sounds hokey, but...
Yeah, but it just looks like a fish. That fish moves through the water like that, you know? It breaks water.
Okay.
Right? That's what a leg rat does. Breaks water and they just... You know, like people saying, oh, Page aboard this. I'm going, have you been talking to sharks? Are they colorblind or what? Or what? How do they look at things, you know?
Yeah.
You've got no idea. They're a shark.
I'm curious how often, what surf media do you follow nowadays?
Surface Journal.
Okay.
That's it.
You subscribe?
Yep.
Good for you.
I've subscribed, then went off for a while because I was going... sort of went flat for a little while, and then all of a sudden now it's back interesting again.
Good.
And it's really good. Australian media, like, you know, we've got Australian surfing magazines, and they go, you want to advertise? I say listen here, I said, without surfboard building there is no surf. I said, yet you want to make every surfboard builder pay to advertise in your magazine, and you don't do anything for anyone that's doing it. I said, it's ridiculous. I said, without us, there's no industry. Just remember that. Then you don't have a magazine.
What board builders do you look at? What upcoming board builders do you look at with interest? Is there anybody?
Not really. I have, because Instagram, the other thing that was interesting about Instagram, you're in touch with a lot of people that you know, and it's more private than Facebooks or anything, right? Mm-hmm. Mitchell Ray is one of my fans, Outer Island. Then I look at Michael Mackey from South Coast, Jed Doan. There's a whole bunch of range. You just look at it, and then, because they're all doing it from the heart. You know, there's a lot of people doing it from the pocket. Not many people do it from the heart, and not aware of how many surfboards they make. You know, where I read a book that came out of California about the surfboard industry done by two professors, one from Santa Barbara University, one from Los Angeles, right? They talked about how toxic the industry was. And you go, all right, we're pretty toxic. For what we put out, you know, we don't do it, there's not a lot, but for what we put out, there's a lot of, it's so toxic. Like these guys with the shaping machines, they're shaping blanks that are bigger. I get blanks that are close. I look at the Burford blanks and go, I can do this blank for this board, so I don't have to cut too much off it.
Of course.
Right? And where they use blanks that are way oversized, because most of the kids using machines aren't machinists.
Right.
They're just someone that's being employed. right? Yeah. So there's a lot of waste in that. There's a lot of foam. And
then you end up with the softest part of the blank anyways.
Yeah,
so
in the marshmallows. Problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're all using lightweight blanks. I use just a standard blank, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I'm into sustainable. Like, I got four boards here, up there, built in 1969.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I did a thing with the Sustainable Surfboard Project 3 years ago in Byron. And I just said to people, I said, you know, we can go all these new materials, but if they're going to break down in 6 months, that's not sustainable.
No.
You still exactly. have to recycle everything. I said, sustainable surfboards are boards that have been glassed properly and last.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
And they're like, so they're 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's interesting. And they've started that, we shouldn't say too much, but to get the logo to say your board's sustainable, mm-hmm. you have to buy stuff that they, off them, to get the, I'm going, hang on here. This is pretty. Everyone's got a hand in the pocket.
In regard to following your friends on Instagram, I mean, it's such, comparing that to what you were saying was taking place in the 50s and the 60s, yeah. where you only had Surfer magazine to look at,
yeah.
and then hopefully once a year, somebody would come from Hawaii and bring a board for you to see what Brewer was doing yeah. or somebody yeah. else. It was such a slow transfer of information back yeah. then. Now it's pretty amazing just to be able to see what they're doing immediately today in yeah. their shaping bay.
But it's still not physical. Right. I'm into right. seeing things physically.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's just on the screen. I'm just into seeing things physically.
Yeah.
And then you can feel them and touch them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's really important that you touch things.
Yeah.
There's a little board here.
I was going to pick that up after
it's
we
were phenomenal.
Done. Is it?
Yeah.
It looks
the glass is a glasses board, right? I made it for him. He just said, okay, it's unbelievable. And everyone's had it. Everyone surfed it, had it. Sometimes someone will have it for 6 months and won't give it back because it goes so good.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome. They're
just, it's something like that. Tony Elvington, Doris was here last week. We were talking about it. I helped him in his career going early days, helped him how to shape, everything like that. We're talking about this board I made way back. It was a concave deck, everything, fish. And everyone surfed it. He won 3 or 4 titles on it.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
Guy Omorad won things on it, Joe Engel won things yeah. on it. Just, he said, it was just one of those specials. He said, I remember it so clearly, he said.
Hmm.
It's interesting.
I'm aware of our time. We've got about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So the last... question for everybody interviewed is just, what was the last surfboard that you rode? For you, it's probably been a little while.
Last one, 10-foot.
It's the 10-foot that threw your arm out?
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I was talking to, do you know Steve Coletta out yeah. of Santa Cruz? He's a board builder.
Yeah.
Older guy. And he was explaining, you see a lot of older guys getting on larger boards.
Yeah.
He said, no. As I've gotten older, I ride shorter boards
yeah.
for the exact reason you said. Yeah, yeah, it's harder. It's less stable. But it's a lot less work to
yeah.
duck dive, to kind of swing the board around when you're going to paddle back out.
Yeah.
To swing a large board takes a tremendous amount of strength, and you'll injure yourself.
Yeah.
So he's riding 6-foot short
yeah.
boards.
Yeah. It's just the paddling with your shoulders, you know.
Yeah.
And I go to a physio in Byron, who was a surfboard shaper, and he says it's just the position we laid in, right? And it's just interesting. It's just interesting. I've got a 9-foot as well that goes really good, but yeah, someone else has got it and loves it, and I haven't seen him.
Because he loves it that
much. Yeah. And it's the same. It's carbon and EPS.
Yeah.
Carbon's such a good material, and a lot we're not seeing it in this industry very much, because I learned if you're using carbon, it's got to be enveloped. You can't just use strips.
Yeah.
It's got to be enveloped. You look at carbon bikes, they're complete carbon.
Yep.
And it's all pre-pregged, because when I got burnt to the ground and started shaping again, a friend of Mick's was a surfer. He's a surfer, but he made surf boats. Right? He said, I'll share a factory with you for a while and I'll glass your surfboards. And he used to take me all these seminars about carbons, everything like composites, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah, but again, it's a price thing. It's
oh, yeah.
price prohibitive for the
yeah.
consumer
yeah.
to wrap their brain around.
Yeah.
Well, thank you
yeah.
for your time.
No worries.
Thank you, Dick Van Strelen, for a very entertaining afternoon. And another thanks, by the way, to Jake Holloway from Shapers in Australia for facilitating this one and hosting me on the Gold Coast. Everything that Dick and I discussed is available on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then again, if you haven't ordered your Slow Tide towels after hearing this on the previous two podcasts that I mentioned it on, you're only hurting yourself. Slowtide.co. Use promo code podcast. Start with an oversized beach towel. You will absolutely love it. Or maybe you need a changing poncho. I'm going to be upgrading my bath towels next. Everything is plush, gorgeous. They're responsibly made towels. The kind that I actually look forward to stuffing my face into when I get out of the water. Anyway, it's the simple things that I appreciate. Slowtide.co. Use our promo code podcast to support this show, and then that also gives you 10% off. So thank you for doing that. And then again, if you're a surfboard shaper, make sure to check out those tools that Dane from Vulcan made. I've posted them on surfsplendorpodcast.com as well. I'll be back next week, but in the meantime, you should really check out this week's episode of The Grit, where Chaz and I interview former president of the Oprah Winfrey Network, and he is our current WSL president of content, Eric Logan. Super fun conversation. This is David Scales for Surf Splendor, reminding you to get back into the ocean, share some waves, and shred on.